About 10 days ago, I was watching Bill Maher's real-time show on HBO, and he had a guest who intrigued me. Her name is Saru Jayaraman. She's the director of the Food Labor Research Center at Berkeley and the co-founder of the Restaurant Opportunities Center. But what mostly intrigued me was her new book, which is called Behind the Kitchen Door, which is kind of an expose of what's going on in those kitchens of all of those restaurants, both the chain restaurants and the mom-and-pop ones that you and I go to every day. So I've invited her to join me here on America Weekend. Hi, Saru. How are you?
Hi. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm fascinated by what you're talking about here because mostly you're talking about how little the people who work behind those kitchen doors are making, right?
That's right. The restaurant industry right now is the largest and fastest growing industry in the United States, but actually happens to be the employer of 7 of the 11 lowest paying jobs in America. So you've got the largest industry in America proliferating the lowest paying jobs in the country, unfortunately.
So are you advocating for what President Obama wants, which is an increase in the minimum wage from $7.25 to $9 at the federal level?
Actually, we want more than what President Obama mentioned. So there's a bill in Congress right now called the Fair Minimum Wage Act, introduced by George Miller in the House and Senator Harkin in the Senate. It is actually moving quite rapidly through Congress and has gotten a lot of support and attention. And it doesn't just raise the minimum wage to $10.10 over several years, but it actually raises the minimum wage for tipped workers. So what most people in America don't know is that back in 1996, Herman Cain, who ran for president on the Republican ticket, struck a deal with Congress saying that the head of the National Restaurant Association, which is this really powerful trade lobbying group representing McDonald's and Olive Garden and Red Lobster, that they would not oppose the overall minimum wage continuing to rise as long as the minimum wage for tipped workers stayed frozen forever. And so the minimum wage for tipped workers in the United States has been stuck at $2.13 an hour for the last 22 years, which means that the restaurant industry relies entirely on customers to pay its workers' wages for them. And so this bill that's moving through Congress would actually raise not only the minimum wage for all workers, for cooks and dishwashers, people in the kitchen, retail workers, all different kinds of workers, it would also raise the wages for tipped workers and re-peg the tip minimum wage finally after 22 years to 70% of the regular minimum wage. It would be a dramatic increase for tipped workers who servers in America suffer from 3 times the poverty rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce and use food stamps at double the rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce, which means the people who put food on our tables can't afford to eat themselves. So it's long overdue and coming.
Now, when you talk about the burden being on the customers to essentially pay these people's salaries through the tips, when I've talked about things like this before, I've heard people on the other side say, well, you know what they're saying, which is, look, if we raised the amount we have to pay as an industry to these workers, well, then the customers are just going to have to pay more. But we're already paying that. Raise your rates for your food 10 or 15%, and you still won't be up to the amount that I'm tipping, but at least these people will be making more money.
That's absolutely right. And we actually just did a study at Berkeley, several professors and I, where we calculated how much would this bill, this current bill in Congress, cost the average consumer if employers passed on 100% of the cost to consumers. And we found that, we titled the report A Dime a Day, because literally, even if employers passed on 100% of a minimum wage increase to customers, it would not cost us more than pennies on the dollar for your hamburger in a restaurant and pennies on the dollar in a grocery store. It's a dime a day total for all food bought outside of the household, groceries and restaurants, for the average American household. And I want to say, just like you're saying, I mean, we're already paying for it. We're paying these workers' wages through our tips. Employers are already marking up prices for other reasons, and they tend not to pass on 100% of the cost to consumers, but even if they did, it would be pennies on the dollar. So the argument just doesn't hold true empirically.
What about the other part of their argument, which is, look, if we have to charge people more, then we're going to get less business, and we're going to have to fire people. This is part of the whole minimum wage opposition. They don't want the wage increased for all workers, because that means we'll have to have fewer workers. But isn't it the right. case that businesses hire the people they need to get the job done, and if they have have enough people to take care of their customers, that's a good business, and they're going to have them regardless of how much it costs?
That's absolutely right. So, you know, there are 7 states in the United States that have higher minimum wages for tipped workers and for all workers. They include California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Alaska, Montana, Minnesota. The 5 of these 7 states have a higher growth rate of restaurants than the restaurant industry in the rest of the country. California is actually the largest and fastest growing restaurant industry in the country. And the city with the highest minimum wage in the United States for restaurant workers is San Francisco. San Francisco has the largest and fastest growing restaurant industry of any city of its size. And so the argument just doesn't hold true empirically. When you raise the wage, you find the places that have raised their wages are doing great. They're thriving, sometimes better than other places. And we've got 100 employer partners around the country. They range from celebrity chefs like Tom Colicchio, star of Top Chef, all the way down to small mom-and-pop restaurants who actually right now pay more to their workers, pay livable wages. And they find that they do well because they pay their workers well, not in spite of it. They find that their turnover is less, that their productivity is better, that workers sell better because they're happier, they're treated better. They're more invested in the business. And so across the board, we have found when you pay your workers well, the industry does better, the employers do better, and certainly the customers do better, because we don't want, as customers, we don't want people who are too poor or too sick to serve our food.
Yeah, the too sick part gets me, because in many cases, people are too sick. They don't have health coverage because they're only, quote, part-time workers. Even if they're working more than 30 hours a week, they're still considered part-time, so they don't get health coverage or benefits, even if and they're lucky if the restaurant offers it at all. But then they end up going to work sick and breathing on my food.
That's right. So we've surveyed more than 7,000 workers nationwide, and we found that 90% of restaurant workers in America don't have paid sick days.
Wow.
And 90% don't have health care, which means 2/3 report cooking, preparing, and serving our food when they're sick with H1N1, true story in my book, where I just met a worker who worked with typhoid fever or the flu. I mean, it's not that workers are choosing to come to work sick and be sick on your food. It's that they actually are told by the industry that they'll be fired if they don't come to work, even when they're sick. And if you're living off your tips, you know, you have to go to work. You have no choice whether you're sick or you're not. You have to go to work to get those tips.
So
that isn't good for any of us.
Saru, is it better at the so-called feel-good places? You know, all our food's organic, or we only serve free-range chicken. Is it better for workers there?
Sadly, no. That is not a good indicator of whether somebody is treating workers well. Unfortunately, this is a pervasive problem across all different kinds of restaurants. And that's why it's so important that if you care about local and organic and your health, that you have to ask when you eat out, not only is this local, is this organic, is this free-range chicken, you actually should be asking, you know, at the end of your meal, say to the manager, love the food, I love the service, but I would love to see you provide paid sick days, or I would love to see you provide a livable wage, because those things are important to me as a customer. And we actually created a free smartphone app that you can download for free on your iPhone. It's called the ROC National Diner's Guide, and it tells you how the restaurants right around you are faring on these issues. So you can use that tool and speak up when you eat out. And even if the restaurant you're going to is not in that smartphone app, you can still speak up at the end of your meal and tell a manager, you know, I do care about local and organic and my health, but I also care about minimum wage and basic days. These issues are important to me.
It's amazing that there are people in the restaurant industry who are making less money than I did when I worked at McDonald's in 1976. Saru, I appreciate you joining me here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Saru Jayaraman, her book is called Behind the Kitchen Door. She's director of the Food Labor Research Center at Berkeley and the co-founder of the Restaurant Opportunity Center United. I'm Paul Harris. That's my portion of America Weekend for this weekend, but I hope you'll join me again next Saturday and Sunday mornings. Remember, you can stay in touch with me by email, paul@americaweekend.com, from the Envision Radio Networks.
America Weekend.